Hi, my name is Dr. Margaret Campbell, and I'm a cardiovascular field medical director with our internal medicine organization. At Pfizer, we are committed to creating change for the better by doing our part to impact the future of clinical research and partnering with the healthcare community to impact diversity and inclusion. Today, we are going to spend some time talking about how we can work and learn more to act on that commitment. I'm very honored to welcome Dr. Keith Ferdinand, Professor of Medicine, and Gerald S. Beringson, Chair in Preventative Cardiology at Tulane University, in a conversation around managing diversity in clinical trials. A topic that highlights many rapid evolving areas of patient management, research, and healthcare equity. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Dr. Ferdinand, it's great to have a chance to speak with you today, and I've had the pleasure to know you for very many years. I think the very first time we met each other was back in 2007 when you were in Emory University in Atlanta after Hurricane Katrina, and you were also serving at that time as the chair of the Association of Black Cardiologists. How do you think that the natural disasters, the hurricanes, and most recently the COVID-19 pandemic, how do you think it's affected your patients?
Well, it's had a profound effect. You know, if you look at the mortality figures in terms of longevity in the United States, and these are publicly available, there is a white-black mortality gap. I call it the white-black death gap, where black men have the shortest life expectancy compared to white men. Black women have a shorter life expectancy compared to white women. And it's not driven by some of the things that we find very salacious, drive-by shootings and drug overdoses. It's mainly driven by cardiovascular disease. Well, that's bad enough. That's been going on for decades. When COVID-19 came along, there was a disparate degree of hospitalization and death related to the coronavirus infections.
How do you think that the events have impacted the healthcare community and access to care? I know you spoke a little bit about what you did. How do you think it's impacted your other colleagues and just the patients getting access to care?
You know, one of the sequelae of natural disasters is whatever's the body count when you have the hurricane, earthquake, forest fires. The real sequelae are people who've had disrupted care. And we don't know that for sure. We do know longevity has decreased across all populations, with the decrease in the African-American and Hispanic populations greater than that seen in the white population.
Well, you've had so much experience over the years, and I've heard you speak many times on the access to healthcare and a lot of the racial disparities. What do you see as some of the major barriers in the community that you work in for access to healthcare to your patients?
Well, first of all, the healthcare disparities are real. I'm not talking about social science, a bad tweet, a bad Facebook post. I'm talking about mortality. Let's look at the African-American community. I'm here in New Orleans, which is about 60-65% African-American. Higher rates of hypertension, higher rates of diabetes, heart failure, chronic kidney disease, end-stage renal disease rates are about three times that would be predicted by population alone. Higher rates of hospitalization and higher rates of cardiovascular death. So what drives that? Well, there's not one gene or set of genes that can explain such a widespread degree of disparities. I think it's driven by what we call the social determinants of health, where people work, live, and play. And one of the first things you look at is having adequate insurance, being able to have an identifiable source of primary care, a medical home where you get preventive care, and then seeking care early in the disease process. If a person uses urgent care centers and the emergency department as their primary source of care, they'll get care, but it's later in the disease process. If they wait until they can't urinate, then they have end-stage renal disease. They're short of breath with minimal activity and awaken at night short of breath, they have heart failure. Severe chest pain, myocardial infarction, can't see or can't move part of their body, or stroke. Those things are largely preventable. So seeking even the best of medical care later on in the disease leads to disparate outcomes.
You know, as you just mentioned and talked about new therapies and how we're moving forward, one of the issues you and I have discussed in the past, too, is the need for a more diverse patient population in our clinical trials. What do you kind of see currently as the biggest barrier for that lack of diversity?
Well, first of all, we need diversity so that we can be assured that new therapies, lipid lowering, heart failure, hypertension, can be applied equally across populations. We live in a very heterogeneous population. People have various ways that they present with disease. And we want to make sure that our new therapies work as well in one population as another. The same is true of sex and gender status. We want to make sure that we have inclusion of women so that we can be sure that whatever we're utilizing is effective in the female population. The biggest barrier? Well, there are a lot. One of them is our investigators themselves. They may be in major academic centers, excellent physicians and researchers, but they may not have access to the community and may not be able to get the diversity within the population studied that would be optimal to demonstrate that the newer therapies can be applied across all peoples. The other problem might be on the other side, the community itself, especially African Americans, but I think other racial ethnic minorities have a certain degree of mistrust in the traditional healthcare delivery system. And it's not because they're simply backwards or have poor understanding. Some of the mistrust is driven by a legacy of maltreatment. Well, patients feel that they're not being given the same degree of attention, care, and education as some of their other counterparts who may have a better financial status. So you have a combination of not having diversity in investigators or access to the patient population, and then within the patient population itself, a high degree of mistrust. And it's kind of a secret sauce that leads to bad outcomes in terms of diversity in clinical outcomes.
Thanks so much for that insight, Dr. Ferdinand, because I think it's so important for us to kind of understand where we've been, where we are now, and kind of where we need to go as well, too.
One way to do that is to partner with organizations like the Association of Black Cardiologists. Although it's a relatively small organization, it partners with huge numbers of the community throughout the nation, and they may be able to find those investigators who may not be within the major academic centers but can give you access to patients and can act as investigators to increase diversity in the volunteers in the study.
Dr. Ferdinand, thank you for your time today and for sharing your stories and sharing your insight. This certainly was an incredible example of the types of conversation Pfizer Field Medical has with healthcare providers every day and showcases the importance of listening to patients and providers across all communities and settings. You cover the challenges and opportunities of engaging patients in clinical trials, especially during difficult circumstances. I can only add that ensuring diversity in clinical trials is a matter of equity, and it's conversations like this that will advance this goal. Thank you again, and thank you to our listeners of this recording. Dr. Ferdinand received an honorarium for his time and contributions to this recording.